The following is a production of the Logan Park Neighborhood Association. Thanks for joining us for this podcast today. Logan Park Neighborhood Association is committed to keeping our community informed on issues that affect the health of our neighborhood. Now let's join the conversation.
If you've ever visited any major city in America, then you'd know that homelessness is a growing problem here. The city of San Francisco spends $200 million every single year trying to get homeless people off the streets. And while many attribute their lifestyle to laziness or drug addiction or a dwindling economy, a new study says that traumatic brain injuries could be an underlying cause. A team of researchers at St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto looked at data from 111 homeless men, ages 27 to 81, and found that almost half of them had experienced a traumatic brain injury at some point during their lives.
We have to talk about homelessness. And there are over 500,000 Americans without a safe and permanent place to live. There's no one way for them to look. And yet popular misconceptions about the homeless often vilify them as lazy criminals.
People also think it's an easy situation to escape.
Do you think the homeless are lazy?
I feel like it's more convenient to sit on the street than to actually like clean themselves up and like go try and find a job.
Well, if they weren't lazy, they wouldn't be on the street.
Why?
Because they have enough strength to be out in the streets and walk around and not get work.
One of the most overrepresented groups when it comes to homelessness are college students. Over 1 in 10 have been homeless in the past year, compared to less than 1% of the general population.
I spent over 12 years in prison. In 18 years, I did 12 total. And it wasn't the hard part, wasn't going to prison, it was getting out and trying to be part of society again. But I can't get a job here or here or here. I can't have any apartments because they won't accept felons. And they'll give a pedophile an apartment before they will me because I had a drug charge. I wasn't even dealing drugs, I had possession. But anybody that has possession of drugs, they're worried about them selling drugs in their apartments.
Homelessness is often misunderstood by most people. And whatever you feel about homelessness, they are a part of our society. Along with some of the misunderstanding about homelessness, we have even a greater problem in what to do about it. Most municipalities do some kind of temporary shelter, but many of the homeless find those solutions unacceptable because of safety and fear. There is a host of other problems with homelessness, such as unstable mental health conditions, drugs and alcohol addiction, while others may be felons who have had a hard time trying to find someone to rent from. And finally, rents are too high for minimum wage people. Today on the podcast, we try to talk openly and honestly about homelessness with a woman who has worked for decades on the problem, both on a local and as well as a national level. My guest today is Sue Watlow Phillips, the executive director of MICA. For decades, Sue has had a passion for social justice and equity, ensuring everyone has a safe and affordable place to call home. This has been her passion since the 1980s. She has worked for 52 years in social justice with the emphasis on serving people at risk and experiencing homelessness and the housing crisis. Sue is also a founding board member of MICA. Sue has a BA in psychology, a master's in counseling and psychological services. She is a retired licensed psychologist, licensed independent clinical social worker, marriage and family therapist, and certified sports psychologist. She is the author of Adapting Your Practice, Recommendations for the Care of Homeless Patients with Opioid Use Disorders. The objective of our podcast today has to do with gaining information and understanding about homelessness. There have been many neighbors who have been concerned about the encampment in Logan Park and the ramifications of what that brings into our community. Today, our objective is not to look at those issues, but to look at the issues of homelessness in general and why people end up in an encampment such as ours in Logan Park. I want to thank you for joining us today for the Logan Park Neighborhood Association's podcast. Sue, tell us, what is it about homelessness that caught your attention years ago? I think 52 years ago, to be honest. And you've been in this work ever since. What caught your attention originally?
So as a person of faith, believe, you know, that we're to love God and love others as ourselves. And so for me, I have a home. I believe that I will have an eternal home as I leave this planet. And so I believe that as people of faith, that we are called to make sure that people do have homes. I had friends in high school that were running away from home, and that sparked my interest. My dad went out when some of his business partners had some of their children that were struggling and ran away from home, and he would go out and look for them. And then later in life, I learned from my dad is that after World War II, that my mom and dad were at risk of experiencing homelessness because they had no place to go once he was discharged. The social justice issue for me, so I grew up during the civil rights movement and so very much involved in civil rights.
So you really had a personal experience with homelessness, especially with your family and so forth. And I don't know homelessness as obviously you do, but I do know there are different layers to it, right? Can you tell us what those layers are? I mean, some people are homeless because of financial issues, some because of emotional and mental issues. I mean, tell us what we don't know about homelessness. We don't have any clue about what that's all about.
About 78% of the American population is living paycheck to paycheck right now. And so we have a situation where we have about half the population that is 1 to 2 paychecks away from not being able to make mortgage or rental assistance. So everyone that's experiencing homelessness, or just about everyone experiencing homelessness, has an issue in not having enough resources. And then that's when the layering starts. After you don't have enough resources for housing, then what else gets in the way? Certainly discrimination gets in the way, where we have certain populations that are discriminated against in housing. And then if you have any issues in your background in regards to any poor rental history, if you've had any struggles with credit, if you've had any struggles with criminal history, those also get in the way. And then if you have had any health issues like mental health or chemical health issues, all those can layer together to create basically a perfect storm for difficulty getting into housing. The other issue is that, you know, you and I are both old enough that we remember when in Northeast Minneapolis, you could rent a whole house for $200 a month. And now you can't do that. You'd have to spend about, you know, $2,000 to $3,000 a month to rent a whole house, probably, if you could even find one. And so the wages that we have and the incomes that we have not kept up with the housing costs, and we have not invested in housing the way that we used to. So many changes happened in the 80s with both Republicans and Democrats being a part of that, and some cuts that we saw on federal dollars for housing. But in 1986, we made a major tax change, the last major tax overhaul since the one that we just did a couple of years ago. And that took away the tax breaks for the mom-pa landlord. We used to have a lot of mom-pa landlords in Northeast Minneapolis. And we took away the tax breaks and so that they couldn't make money being landlords anymore. It was a rapid depreciation of their buildings. And so a lot of folks got out of the business that had just, you know, neighborhood-based type of rental units. And so those dollars went into a good program called the Low-Income Housing Tax Credit, but a very difficult program and a highly tax syndicated program that takes people with a lot of money to make that work. So we just have not invested in our infrastructure of housing and making sure that people have a safe, decent, accessible home, whether it's rental or affordable housing, that is affordable for them. I think the other thing that we tend to forget is that, you know, 97 to almost 100% of us were renters at some point in our life. And so sometimes as we do better in life and we end up owning a home, like I own the home that I grew up in here, is that, you know, we forget about those times when we were renters and that it might have been really easy for us to get into rental housing like we did in the 60s and 70s, where you just gave a check to the landlord and you moved in. You didn't pay a damage deposit. You didn't do an application fee, and you certainly didn't have a credit check and a criminal check done on you. And so it's very different now, you know, 40 to 50 years later, as we are now dealing with the housing market and with growing homelessness. We're now going into our fifth decade of growing homelessness, which is the longest period ever in the United States since the colonial day.
You know, as I look at Northeast, I see so many market value apartments going up. I mean, they're everywhere. They're like cockroaches almost, you know, they're everywhere and they just pop up, and they're not affordable for most people. I mean, if you have a double income and so forth, yes. Why are we allowing, when I say we, why is the government, those that have legislation over these things, why are those things allowed without some affordable housing in the mix?
So just to add to what you're saying is that basically to afford the market rate unit right now for one bedroom, you need to be making $18 to $19 an hour working full time, 52 weeks a year, 40 hours a week. And for a two bedroom, it's typically about $22 working full time. And so those are just not the incomes for a lot of the types of jobs that we have in Northeast Minneapolis. And so in the 60s and 70s during urban renewal, we actually demolished a lot of housing in our downtown areas and built convention centers and stadiums and different things like that, and didn't replace the housing. And so right now, the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area is just a very hot rental market with a lot of growth in jobs prior to the COVID-19. And so there was a real boom in basically building that housing at market rate. And a part of the reason that it's been able to move ahead is that we don't have rent controls in the state. It's not allowed under state law right now. And that while we have an expectation that there are affordable units in a lot of the developments, we oftentimes have developers that work around those processes.
You know, one of the obvious issues that we see in homelessness is now people that are camping in our parks. And all of a sudden we go, wow, there are a lot of homeless people. There's a lot of tents, obviously a lot of homeless people. So how serious is the homeless problem in the state of Minnesota?
It's very serious, and it's serious across the nation too. As president of the National Coalition for the Homeless, dealing with all the national issues. So right now, with the COVID-19, we have about 40 million people that are at risk of eviction before the end of the year. We probably have somewhere in Minnesota anywhere from 100 to 150,000 people that are at risk of being evicted or losing their home, in addition to the people that were experiencing homelessness prior to the COVID-19, which typically were around 15,000 people that were literally homeless. That meant in the shelter, on the streets, in transitional housing, in other types of settings, plus the 17,000 children that are in the educational system in Minnesota that are living doubled up. We're looking at about, 25 to 30,000 unduplicated folks that were experiencing homelessness prior to the COVID-19 throughout a given year or at any given time. And so what we have is a situation, again, as we said earlier, talked about earlier, is that we have this mismatch between what people's income is and what the housing availability is, where we do have a lot of vacancies in our market rate housing, but we don't have vacancies in our very affordable housing. In fact, it's much lower than 1%. And then a strong rental market, you have basically about a 4 to 5% vacancy rate. You have the turnover that's happening in the units. So we just don't have the housing stock. So in Minnesota, we have about 175,000 households with incomes less than 30% of median income. So basically less than $30,000 a year that they're living on. Minneapolis and St. Paul, basically, we don't have any units that rent for that level unless you're on some type of a subsidy to be able to help in paying for that rent.
Some of my neighbors will say things like, there's a lot of places that house people, overnight housing and so forth. So why aren't our homeless people going there? And then they say things like, well, the homeless don't want to go there because they have to follow rules. They can't do their drugs and they can't do this or they can't do that. How much truth is in all of that?
I think one of the main things that, we really focus on is that people that have been impacted by homelessness and the housing crisis really need to be at the decision-making tables to help set up the systems that are being developed and the types of sheltering, the types of housing that are being created, and people impacted by the housing crisis. For way too long, typically how we do this is that people that have not experienced homelessness set up these systems and set up the rules, and it just doesn't really fit for folks. So we do have people that will not go into certain shelters because of the rules that are in the shelter in regards to that they can't bring their things in to the shelter. There's no storage to put their things. It may not be safe. It may get so in the current situation, in a lot of our congregate shelters or our shelters like church-based shelters, we've really actually moved people into motel rooms to keep them safer from the COVID-19 themselves, as well as to keep the entire community safe. And so many of the folks that were at the old Sheraton ended up at Powderhorn when that closed. So then the Minneapolis Park Board basically decided that in response to the peacetime emergency, which allows encampments to be on public land, is that they would allow up to 25 tents on specific parks throughout the Minneapolis area, in Minneapolis and then in other communities on other properties also.
I want to go back to, there's a provision in the law that allows for the park to be opened up to public housing or tents and so forth, because I don't think people realize that. What I have been hearing from my neighborhood here in Logan Park is, well, why in the world did the Minneapolis park system decide to do this? Because that's not their business. Their business is taking care of the park, not managing an encampment. But you're saying there is a provision in the law that gives them an emergency provision. Say that again, because I think that's important for people to hear.
Certainly. So when we went into the peacetime emergency that the governor declared, the peacetime emergency, and many of us were told to stay at home. Of course, people experiencing homelessness didn't have a place to go to because they had no home to go to. And unfortunately, all the bathrooms at rec centers, at libraries, the restaurants closed. I mean, there weren't even places for people to use facilities and not even food places. So we worked with the governor's office and we worked with cities and counties in trying to make sure that we had places for people to go. But a part of that is there are three executive orders that the governor has issued that are in compliance with the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, in regards to how to assist people that are experiencing homelessness during the pandemic. And one of them, obviously, was to allow encampments on public land. And so encampments were allowed on any public land. And as people moved into the Powderhorn Park and the City of Minneapolis Park Board got more involved in it, what they thought would be helpful is to have smaller encampments, the different park lands, to abide by the peacetime emergency and the executive orders by the governor, but to provide that as well as with a permit so that only certain people would be in that encampment that would be allowed by the holder of the permit. So I think in Logan Park, we have the wonderful opportunity, one of MICA's board members, Janelle Freeman Anderson, who is formerly homeless, who has started Freedom from the Streets, who is helping with that encampment and holds that permit and really does, you know, works and with the park police and with the city police and keeping drugs and alcohol out of there and really making it a safe place and inviting the community to help, which I can just say the Logan Park community has just been incredibly supportive of providing food, letting people have showers in their homes, coming over and visiting with people. As we continue to work in helping people move into other housing opportunities and or into motels or shelters as we can.
So what is your hope as you look at the encampments around the city? What is your hope? Will we be here again next year, same kind of situation? Because I know in 2017, when the encampment was along Hiawatha, you know, everyone was up in arms. Well, we have to do something. Well, they made some temporary provisions, but really nothing has been done since then, at least in my eyes. And now we have the encampment. So where are we going to go from here that you think is realistic to help the homeless people stay out of tents and stay out of parks and have a better place, a better environment for them to live? What's your hope?
I mean, I think that obviously my hope over the last five decades is that we as one of the richest countries in the world will take our responsibility to have a right to housing for all of our folks in the country, and that we have people that have experienced homelessness or the housing crisis that are at every decision table so that we are really designing housing opportunities that meet the needs of folks. One of the big issues that I don't think that we understand, and the COVID-19 has been helpful in showing the different disparities, but we invest five times as much money into us as homeowners through our tax breaks and through different resources as we do into rental housing. So if we brought equity into our housing dollars in homeownership and rental, that would go a long ways. And then many people know that we've spent $2 trillion over the last couple months on propping up the stock market. And so I was on a state call yesterday, and I said, if we put $2 trillion into housing and preventing homelessness, I guarantee we would not be having these statewide homeless calls anymore because we would be dealing with the issue. Now, will we always have some level of homelessness in the country? Yes, we always have, that people get into various situations, but we can prevent it and we can move people rapidly back into housing. Having housing opportunities and choice, because we all live very differently. I mean, some folks want to live in tiny homes, which Elam Church has a little tiny home with the Envision Project that the community's been very supportive in Northeast about, and trying to find a place that we can have tiny home communities on lots in Northeast or in Minneapolis, and that's allowable now. Some people want to live in intergenerational housing. In our Somali and Asian and Hispanic communities, that's often typical, as well as some of our other cultures within Northeast. So I think we have to really listen to people and the types of housing that people want to live in. And then I think we need to understand that we, in addition to investing in housing, is that we need livable incomes, both employment as well as people that are on Social Security or on any type of public assistance, because people need the resources to be able to afford housing. It doesn't make sense to not provide enough income for people to do that, meet their basic needs. And then we need healthcare that's affordable and accessible to everybody, because we know that the large number of bankruptcies that happen because of high healthcare bills end up in people losing their homes and home ownership and also losing their rental units. And then that we really need to understand our educational system. While many people, you know, really want to go to college and maybe get advanced degrees, which I have the opportunity to do too, and I encourage people to do that if that's really what they want to do, is that we need to provide that in an affordable way. But we have a really changing economy, and as we hopefully go to more green energy opportunities, is that we are going to need a lot of folks trained in some other types of skilled jobs, and we need to do significant changes in our infrastructure. And we can get people into the trades making $40 to $60 an hour with 1 year training and no debt. So, I mean, these are jobs that we need to do. And of course, civil rights. I mean, we have structural racism and we have structural classism in our country, and we need to face that. And we need to start loving and treating others the way that we want to be treated.
Very well put, Sue. And I just paid a plumber bill, so I know I should have been a plumber. But you're absolutely right. So Elam's little housing unit, to your knowledge, you can visit that or tour that, right, by contacting Elam Church?
Yeah, I think that there is a sign up through the Envision website. And if you want to go to www.micah.org, we have a video on our Facebook page, as well as I believe it's on our website now also, that you can go to and you can download off some of the information.
Right. So let's once again, your organization is known as Micah. Give us that website again so people listening can go there and get more information even than what you're providing today.
Sure. So Micah is the Metropolitan Interfaith Council on Affordable Housing. So we're made up of many interfaith groups and people that are do not have a specific faith, but just really truly want to be a welcoming community and want to love and treat others as ourselves. And so it's www.micah.org, and that'll get you the local information. And we have chapters throughout the metro area. We're starting a Minneapolis chapter. I encourage you to join us. That'll start out by Zoom meetings for now, but we do meetings at Elam Church quite often, so it'll be right in the neighborhood. And then if you also want to get involved, I'm president of the National Coalition for the Homeless. And so that's nationalhomeless.org, and encourage you to go there. And we continue to work at the national level too.
Homelessness is not going away anytime soon due to the many issues that our guest brought into focus. Are there better solutions than the encampments in our city parks? I sure hope so. And our legislators from the state, the county, and the city need to hear your voice in encouraging solutions that will benefit our neighborhoods and those who are homeless. There are solutions, and we have brought you one person today who believes that it is possible to curb homelessness in our city.
For more information about our theme or guest, you can access it on our website at loganparkneighborhood.org. More podcasts are coming, so please check out the RSS feed on our website to automatically receive them when they come out. The website is simple to remember, loganparkneighborhood.org.